Okay, Alan, I had an idea for our cold open this time. Is yours cold?
Certified cold.
Mine's cold. Okay, 3, 2, 1, open. Welcome to Food Court. I'm Shale McDonald, and I'm here with my friend Alan Sutterby. How you doing, Alan?
Great. It's gorgeous out.
We're two chefs from Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. We love food, and we love to talk about it. So, this is very exciting.
It's a big deal, yeah.
This is the first time that we have ever recorded together in person, face-to-face, like an actual... Well, I guess that's not really true.
Some,
I mean, we
some
did
lost
like
episodes before.
Yeah,
the
yeah. We did some like episode tests a long time before we actually started the podcast. Like when we first started talking about it, which was like what 2 years before the first actual episode or something like that.
Yeah, I think it was 2018. Yeah.
Yeah, but this is the first actual episode that we're going to release where we've like been able to see each other face to face. I mean, we can. There's like a video chat when we're recording normally, but. Yeah, this is pretty awkward.
It's not, I know you're making a joke. It's not socially awkward, but it is actually like, because if you, when, not that I spent a great deal of time thinking about it, but beforehand I was like, oh yeah, so it's the first time we'll be face to face. And, but like we're face to face in a way because we have video feeds, but yeah, it's, it does feel different.
It feels very different. Like, I don't know. There's something, like, that distance or something that we normally have, like, makes it, I don't know, it just makes it feel like there's, like, I don't know, at least for me, it makes it feel like there's sort of a performative aspect to it.
Yes.
But then, like, you know, now we're just, like, sitting here just having a conversation. It's definitely a different vibe.
Yes.
So why is it that we're recording in person, Alan? Do you want to elaborate on that? Well, because we can.
Because the pandemic's over.
Exactly.
we had an idea to do, to have a conversation about my front yard.
Right.
And so we're sitting on the patio in front of my house, looking at my front yard, and we're going to talk about it.
Yeah, and why would your front yard...
Be on a food podcast.
Yeah.
Well, that's a great question. Because the front yard is designed to basically the function of everything in the front yard is to yield food.
Right.
Yeah, to yield something edible, particularly fruit. Mm-hmm. But there's some other stuff going on, and it's kind of like an important and central part to our home life.
Right.
And there's lots of interesting, lots of interesting kind of like stories and backgrounds, and they're just interesting foods to eat. And they're not, some of them are stuff that you can get at the grocery store, and some of them are things that you'll never see at a grocery store in Alberta. So.
And we're gonna try a few things, right? You got some stuff that, I can munch on?
Some samples. I'll send you into the raspberry patch to just see if there's anything going on there.
Sweet.
See if there's anything going on in the strawberry bed.
Russell.
But then, some little composed bites because right now, there's always something going on here, like from June to September. Now we're really excited by the plums, and we'll talk about that. So we have some plums for you to taste.
Cool, yeah, I can see some on the tree there.
We're at the tail end of the sour cherry season, tail end of raspberry season. Strawberries just produce until they can't anymore, like until the snow falls, basically.
Oh, really?
So it might be slim pickings, but there's still strawberry plants in bloom. So they're still trying to fruit, so.
Right. And if we have a warm next few weeks here, like it looks like we're going to,
it'll probably
produce quite a bit.
Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, so like, it's interesting because like, if you look up and down the block on Alan's block, Should I give out your address to everyone?
Not the address, but you can, like, we're in McKernan in Edmonton.
In Edmonton, yeah.
So in South Edmonton, just south of the University of Alberta main campus. So like a not like like a fairly central community.
Yeah, but a community also where it's like a lot of single family dwellings, not a lot of like high rise buildings and stuff like that. It's mostly like houses and duplexes and a few like
Not a lot of high rises. It's changing. Like there's like loads of infills. Like so, like this neighborhood was developed in the late 40s and early 50s, and you'll a lot of those buildings are coming down now to make way, like to divide the lots and make tall, skinny houses.
More population density. I should probably do like a little preemptive sort of like disclaimer about the audio. We're outside. We're just like sitting in the front of Alan's house and there are cars driving by. You'll probably hear sirens.
I can hear a siren right now.
Yeah.
There's kids like
scooting by on scooters. Is that what you do on a scooter? Yeah. Scoot.
There's a skate park like half a block away from us. I can hear like the trucks grinding on the rails.
There will probably be dogs barking, et cetera. So yeah, just a heads up. We're outside in the natural environment, and there are going to be quite a few natural sounds. So anyways, what I was about to get to before is like if you look up and down this block that Alan lives on. You know, it looks pretty normal. Most of the houses on the block have like, there are a lot of like pretty tall, older trees that are on like the city property. And then there are a bunch of houses that mostly just have lawns. And then when you drive by Alan's house, it's just like trees and bushes and all basically food related plants and pretty much no grass. There's like a couple little patches of lawn that are sort of like filling in the gaps between like a lot of the food plants, but it's mostly all food bearing plants, which is like really awesome. If I had my choice for my yard, you know, it'd be something along these lines as well, like fruit trees and, you know, like at least a couple fruit trees and some food bearing plants. And
yeah, the food bearing plants and especially perennial ones, like, not these aren't annual vegetables. Like it's all primarily fruits and nuts and what few perennial vegetables we can grow here, like asparagus and sorrel and stuff. It needs a haircut. The whole thing needs a bit of a haircut right now. But like we did try and give it a bit of design and some lines and edging and stuff like that. But yeah, it's a pretty like what you would generously call like a natural yard.
Right. It's like a pretty wild looking yard. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, you have some things for us to taste and we'll probably get up and do a little walk around tour at some point too. What do you want to do?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't know what the best way to do it is, but don't overindulge me, but like a little bit of the kind of like history of the development of it.
Sure. Yeah.
Like we bought the house, 11 or 12 years ago. And when we purchased it, you can see these other yards around here that have like really towering evergreens in it, like evergreens that are as tall as a 5-story building, basically.
Yeah.
That our front yard had 6 of those in the front yard.
Oh, crazy. So, like 30-foot tall, like those over there look like spruce?
Some kind of spruce, yeah. So there was 4 spruce and a pine and a bay willow that were roughly that size. And so when you drove by our house before we bought it, you could hardly see the house.
Yeah.
And there wasn't much lawn to speak of because all of the needles that drop from a tree like that, it's just like a boreal forest floor kind of, it's just like covered in needles. And
yeah, totally. And it's all shaded mostly. So grass doesn't really have a chance to get hold.
And a couple of years after we had been here, we knew that we wanted to grow, to raise edible species. And so we had those all cut down. And one of the weird like dynamics of being in like what Edmonton calls a mature neighborhood, which is, like I said, 1950.
Right.
Some folks were actually upset, like literally like were upset, like would like.
Like you had people that live in the neighborhood come by yeah. and tell you that they were sad that you were cutting down those trees?
Yeah, I wouldn't say sad.
Oh, upset. Angry.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. because that is like, that's supposed to be like part of the character of these neighborhoods is that, especially like in Edmonton, in the older neighborhoods, the boulevards typically have elms or yeah. poplars that are really well established.
Are these elms on your street? No.
No, okay. not here. But on yeah. the adjacent like north-south street, there are elms.
Right.
And through like just north of here is Garneau, and like all those that's even an older neighborhood, and like the elms are like they're really beautiful canopies over the
yeah.
street. So anyways, yeah, like it was not everyone, but we did hear complaints from people. Mm.
Did those people not understand that this is your house?
Well, they were jerks. I don't know.
It's too bad.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems like kind of a snap judgment for someone to, you know, like,
what right.
How do they know what you're going to do with your yard or with your house or, you know?
Right. Yeah. That's just one of the weird kind of cultural aspects of the quote unquote mature neighborhoods in Edmonton is that there's just like there's folks who have lived there for decades and they
right.
have an idea of what the neighborhood should look like and all that. So
yeah.
And yeah, that's not an Edmonton thing. That's probably just like a,
no, yeah.
it's a suburbia thing. Maybe.
Yeah, exactly. What's that called in the States? Like every neighborhood has I can't remember what it's called, but every neighborhood has like a council that like decides right. what people can do with their yards or what people should do with their yards and right. makes rules about what you can and can't have
yeah.
do with your house. And if you live in a specific neighborhood and they use like peer pressure and things like that to.
Right. Yeah. I mean, and there's an element of that here. Sorry, this isn't like a city planning podcast. There are some great city planning podcasts about Edmonton, but yeah, there's an element of it. That's what the mature neighborhood overlay in Edmonton, it was designed to restrict the kind of development that can happen for infills in mature neighborhoods.
Right.
But anyways, that's kind of beyond what we're talking about. Once those trees came down, this was just a pine needle bed.
Bed, right. Well, and then like getting the roots out of the yard must have been a real ordeal as well.
The arborist that took the tree down stump ground everything.
Yeah.
So the roots at that point, the roots more or less decay. Like none of those. Yeah, there wasn't like any problem with suckering and stuff like that.
Okay.
But when we dug out some of these beds that you can see that the fruit trees are centered in, like yeah, there's large the vestiges of the large roots like
yeah.
naturally decaying underground.
Yeah.
Like
right now they're probably some of them are probably still as like thick as your ankle or something, right?
Oh,
like,
absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. But like at this point, like we're more than 10 years on. So like you can shovel through them and stuff.
Right.
But, so anyways, then the only kind of design plan we had at that point was that, we had learned about this, prairie hardy fruit program at the University of Saskatchewan where they're developing, like specifically developing fruit and nut bearing plants that are prairie hardy so that they can potentially be used as commercial, like agricultural products in the
right.
prairie provinces. And things that we considered not cold hardy or marginally hardy, they're developing cultivars of them that
will be more
that can withstand minus 40
or
winters, basically. Yeah. And basically,
how did you find out about that program? Just like you were doing research because you were looking for food-bearing plants, or
I think it was like honestly, like a lot of the reading and the background work Lisa did.
Oh, yeah.
And I think it was just because we were at the time, like we were involved with slow food and
right.
Community-supported agriculture and those kinds of things. So she found out about it and started reading. And so we decided we didn't have like a comprehensive, you're gonna hear the squirrels clicking in the
I can see that guy over there. I kind of want to go tell him to get lost, but you know what's gonna happen if I do. He's just gonna sit there and go
Yeah. And then a skunk's gonna come out and spray you.
Oh,
and then
geez.
A coyote is gonna.
Oh man, I didn't know that this was gonna be a dangerous recording session.
Oh, extremely dangerous, yeah. We didn't have a comprehensive plan, but we knew that we wanted, like, the features of the yard would be these kind of long-living fruit trees and bushes. Yep. And so that U of S, the University of Saskatchewan fruit program, they don't actually generally sell to the public because it's completely oriented to agricultural business.
Right.
But once a year, they have a sale where they sell cuttings,
like little baby,
like cuttings from the trees that, stuff, that yeah. they've rooted into little pots. Then they're like 6 inches tall above the soil, and it's in a pot that holds like a cup of soil.
Yeah.
And it's $5 a plant.
And they're guaranteed to grow into giant trees, right?
I mean, no, but if you treat them right, that's the idea, yeah.
Yeah.
So we drove to Saskatoon one summer, 10 years ago this summer actually, and we bought a lot of plants, sour cherries, plums, currants, hascaps, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And we planted them in this barren landscape of like what was just pine needles, and now dandelions and stuff are coming up. And
when you went to plant them, did you have to like till the whole thing, or how did you manage that? Or did you just like dig individual spots for each individual plant? Or
for some of these, it's hard to tell now because we have netting over some of it, because this time of year, like, the birds go wild for the cherries that are fully ripe. But like the cherries are actually, we built a raised bed. You can see bricks laid in the ground.
Right.
And so we dug out and backfilled with topsoil and compost, and the cherries went in there. These plums, the two large trees here, the plums and the large apple tree there,
uh-huh.
are basically just dug into whatever the ground was at that time.
Cool.
Since then,
these two plum trees and that apple tree were just sticks when you put them in the ground. They were
so the two plums are from that U of S fruit program, and they were literally 6-inch whips, they're called.
Yeah.
So it's just like a cutting that has been, there's some, I think they put like a rooting compound on the end of it, and they stick it into a pot of soil.
Right.
But they were 6 inches tall, and they were like one of the twigs that you see on the end of their branches there. That's all they were.
Crazy. And what about the apple?
The apple tree is not from the U of S program. And it was, my father-in-law bought it, like maybe even at like Canadian Tire or something, I'm not sure.
Oh, okay.
But it was more like a conventional, like the root ball tree.
Right, like a small,
yeah.
It already had leaves and...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and it was branched out. And
Gotcha.
So for a little while, the yard looked pretty ridiculous. Some say it looks ridiculous now, but it really, for a little while, it really was just like this kind of mess of pine needles and a little bit of grass and a lot of dandelion and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then these little twigs sticking out of the ground.
Yeah. Little twigs that you would like hunch over and, like,
and just like play Mozart to and
yeah, yeah. and like pick off bugs with a pair of tweezers.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then, so that was literally the summer 10 years ago, or exactly the summer 10 years ago. The spring after that, because it was a barren lawn with these little twigs sticking out, jackrabbits came and ate everything.
Oh, yeah.
Ate all of those little twigs down to the ground.
Oh, my
and
God.
We were like, wow, we drove to Saskatchewan. And most of those plants came back, though.
Yeah.
And so now, 10 years on, like the plums are probably almost 10 feet high.
Yeah.
The apple tree is certainly more than 10 feet high. The cherries, we actually prune the cherries back quite a bit to keep them at this,
right.
like at a relatively easy height to pick.
Well, yeah, because there's quite a few of them. So I can imagine that, like, yeah, it could get out of hand pretty quickly if they,
the cherries and the raspberries, like, they're extremely vigorous. Like, they sucker and they'll grow to 12 feet high kind of thing.
Right.
Yeah. So anyways, around those central fruit trees, specifically the cherries, the plums, and the apple, we just kind of built out from them. So like digging out around them and then building these little beds around them that are called guilds. So
okay.
you can see like these little garden beds around each of the fruit trees that have what are supposed to be beneficial kind of companion plants to them.
Gotcha.
Yeah, so it wasn't, it was a, it's been a piecemeal kind of construction.
Sorry, what are those beds called?
Called guilds in
guilds.
The,
okay.
In kind of like permaculture.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, so what's, should we do a little walk around? Or do you want to start by having a little snack first and then?
Sure, let's, because like I've kind of set up that like the cherry plum apple is kind of like the anchor, the focus of the yard.
Yeah.
I can grab you something to taste from.
Okay, yeah,
trees.
Sure, yeah, okay. Sounds great. Okay, you came back. What do you? What did you bring?
So the first, I brought two things. I brought our last season's, I guess, just like our house, our table cider.
Okay.
It's just like hard apple cider, very dry. And this is an Evans cherry liqueur.
Nice.
And so what we do.
Take some of the dry cider.
Is we take, like a little
You're
bit
gonna
of
You're going to make like
the,
a Cure Royale. But
yeah.
With, yeah.
That's exactly right. So like it would be like, so like a Cure Royale is champagne and cassis.
Yeah.
And this would be more like a Cure Breton, which is hard cider and cassis.
Oh, okay.
But we call this a River City Cure.
There you go.
And by we, I mean me. Yeah, just me when I do this. But yeah, it's my, one of the things that really just needs like a hype man and a PR guy to get behind it to make it work. I want
totally.
This to be the official drink of Edmonton.
Oh,
it's
man.
The River City Cure, and it's cherry liqueur, ideally Evans cherry liqueur with hard apple cider.
Can I taste the cherry liqueur just
sure,
like
yeah.
quickly
yeah.
before you pour the cider in?
The cherries, like the, it's not what we do with the bulk of the cherries, but one of our favorite things to do with the cherries is to make liqueur. And there's two different ways that we do that. The one that is really excellent, but takes ages, is that rum pot one that maybe you tasted ours before.
I think so, yeah.
And that one's like, kind of just like an infusion where we take the cherries, macerate them with sugar, and then just cover them with rum.
Okay.
And leave them for months and months.
Right.
And then the liquid like takes on the cherry flavor.
Right.
And it yields like a really clear liqueur.
Just white rum.
We'll use, I've done it all kinds of ways.
Okay.
You can use spiced rum. We usually just use like aged rum, like Havana Club or Florida Canyon and stuff like that.
Okay.
And it takes a while, but I think that does a really great job of capturing the aromatics of the cherry. The kind of cheat way, and that's what this one is here, is where we just juice the cherries and then mix them with vodka or schnapps and sugar.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
Yeah. So this one's not as aromatic, but it's not as important when you're
mixing
it with
cider.
Here. But it's a good, it's a great summer drink. The ciders can be, like, because they're really dry and a lot of the apples are quite tart, and so just like that little hit of sweetness really balances
also
it
that.
Out. So
cheers, Alan.
Cheers.
Nice to see you.
Good to be here.
To be Oh yeah, that's delicious. I mean, I don't know if it's going to take over as the drink of Edmonton from Smirnoff Ice, but like.
Do you think Smirnoff Ice is the official? A little more.
I don't know. It certainly feels like that some days, Alan.
More cider for Morris City, do you think? But yeah. Bud, I don't know what's the most popular. Like surely the most the most popular alcoholic drink in Alberta is Budweiser, right? Or.
Oh, I have no idea.
Yeah, me either.
I mean, I would think probably like Molson Canadian or something like that. Must sell so much Molson Canadian. Yeah, maybe Budweiser. I don't know. I have no idea. I don't really go to the bar anymore.
Why not?
Because it's boring. It's boring and I don't want to get sick.
Right.
Yeah, this drink is delicious, Alan. It's like, nice and like it's tart enough. And
is it?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
I think this bottling is not particularly effervescent. Do you know what I mean? Like, it would be, right. I think it'd be better with bubble, a little bit more bubbles. But,
right.
But yeah, it's nice.
Yeah. So tell me about how you make the cider.
So the cider, and like full disclosure, we do take the apples from that tree, but two things. First of all, that the Norkent variety, it's kind of biennial. It like has a heavy year and then a light year and then a heavy. So like right now there's probably 5 apples on that tree.
Yeah.
So it was a light year, but last year we got quite a bit.
Okay.
Lisa did the legwork on this one. It actually is a great preserving apple. So okay. We are able, like when we get a good yield, we are able to cellar a lot of them.
Right.
However, we eat like 14 apples a day as a family, so it still goes quick.
You eat 14 apples a day?
Not individually, but it's like breakfast. Lisa has an apple, Cora has an apple, Oliver has half an apple. Packed lunch, everyone's got an apple. Afternoon snack, apples, I don't know.
You guys get sick of apples? Get sick of apples?
The kids haven't yet.
Wow.
Yeah.
Must be good apples.
I mean, like, I'm not saying that tree sustains us through the winter.
No.
I'm just saying, like...
But I mean, like, if... I don't know. Like, I ate quite a few apples when I was a kid, too, but I really got bored of them after a while. Yeah. Like, they have to be, like, good to not get bored of them, you know? So what are they like? Are they pretty tart, or...
They're pretty good eating apples, actually.
Yeah.
Like, when we're
There's
doing...
There's one on there. I'm, when, like, really eyeing it up right now.
It's, Yeah, and actually, just in the last week or so, the few that are on the tree this year have started to blush, so...
Yeah.
But the good thing about like just having a few trees in your yard, you can kind of coddle everything and you can actually just like literally let it hang as long as it can hang. Cause every morning, like this time of year, like every morning we go out and like, we say like tickle the plums. Like
okay.
You go out and you just like touch the plums to see if they'll come off so easily. Just like
right.
You touch them and they fall off.
Yeah.
And that means they're ready. Or if like there's windfall ones, like ones on the ground,
yeah.
Like they've only been there for a few hours. So we pick them up and generally we can sleep them. So,
right.
Obviously that's not like how you can operate in a commercial setting.
No, obviously.
But like for these apples.
But I mean, that's the benefit of having like edible plants in your yard is that you
yeah.
can, yeah, take good care of them and get, you know, like you get like a better yield than you would expect because like in a commercial situation, like a lot of fruit gets wrecked or yeah there's a lot of windfall that rots or
yeah.
you know things
well,
like
if
that
not, but if it's not perfect then it can't go to
yeah.
to market basically right
yeah, so exactly.
So yeah it's a fun like for these I know we're talking about the apple but like for the plums like right now it's like this is like full on like we just finished one of these plum trees like we only have a handful of the plums left from it
yeah
and now we're waiting on this guy that you can see that has fruit on it
yeah
and so it's just like three or four weeks where it's just like plums. You can look at my Instagram and it's just like plums. Everything's got plums on it.
It's true. There have been a few plum things on your Instagram lately.
Even stuff that you don't think should have plums on it, it's got plums on it right
yeah.
now. So, yeah.
So, well, the reason why you were talking about the apples is because you were saying that because it, like, you have like a year where there's tons of apples and a year where there's not so many, you were saying that what you have to supplement your cider production but with apples from somewhere else
yeah,
or yeah okay.
totally and
yeah.
like in Edmonton that's not hard at all like
right.
it's there's just so many there's people who are begging for you to take their apples and so yeah just people who have apple trees and like are trying to get rid of the fruit so that it doesn't just go into the garbage or whatever so there's definitely some of our apples in this cider because last year was a heavy year for that tree.
Right.
But there's crab apples in there. There's all kinds of donated
oh, okay.
fruit and stuff that we've picked. And, yeah.
So how much fruit are we talking about? Like how many kilos?
From that tree, you mean?
No, that you use when you like in the fall when you're going to make cider. How much fruit do you want to have when you go to?
It varies a lot year to year. Because we, especially like in years past, when I was making vinegar to sell at markets,
right.
like I had years where I would make like, say something like 20 carboys, so about 400 to 500 liters of cider.
Yeah.
And then when I stopped making vinegar from that, all of a sudden I had all this hard cider on hand that I could just like bottle and cellar or whatever. And then that like lasted us for 2 years. So I didn't press cider for 2 years after
okay.
that. But
did you build the cider press?
Yeah, Eric oh, yeah. and I did.
Yeah,
I mean,
friend Eric, of the show, Eric.
Yeah, yeah, Eric did most of the actual carpentry and stuff. But
right, and do you still have that cider press?
Yeah, it's in my garage. That's what I cool. still use. I yeah. am looking. I want to. I'm trying to think a little bit longer term. Uh-huh. Right now, the way that I crush the apples is with a modified kitchen sink carburetor.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I crushed a bunch of apples with that carburetor.
That's right. Yeah. yeah, yeah. You did. Yeah. yeah. With Sean, right? That's what you mean.
Yeah. 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 yeah.
So right now I still have that, and I still have this wooden frame press that Eric built.
Right.
I'm trying to think about like 20 years from now, I'll be 56 and I'll still
well,
want
Alan,
to
I'm practically 56 right now. Just kidding.
Well, no, but this is a legitimate, like, I want to still make cider as long as I can. And yeah. actually that equipment is quite laborious.
Yeah.
And it's finicky and kind of,
yeah, it's yeah. well, it's, yeah, it's labor intensive to use. Like yeah. you have, yeah.
And actually not super
a lot
safe
of physical.
To be,
yeah,
to
that's
be
true. That's true. Yeah.
And so I meant to do it this year, but didn't get to it, but I want to buy a proper apple. Like there's loads of just like market ready apple crushers
oh,
and
okay.
basket presses or like gotcha. like hydraulic presses, balloon presses. I just want to save up and buy those.
And buy like a
and
real
just try and,
commercial piece of equipment that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. yeah. But anyways, for now, in the fall, we do a little setup in the backyard and make cider. The kids taste the fresh stuff. We can some of the fresh stuff.
Right.
And then, but the bulk of it is fermented, dry, and then bottled.
Oh, so you can fresh juice, and then it, like, once you can it properly, it just, like, will last the winter
stable.
Or whatever? Oh,
yeah,
cool.
Yeah. So, yeah, the kids can have apple juice and,
yeah.
Yeah. But, like, having a cellar full of hard cider is great. Like, there's, well, if we get to it, there's some like interesting variations you can do with it to make interesting drinks, and it's like wherever you would use dry white wine in like a classic yeah. like in a French recipe, like we just use cider.
Right. Yeah. Totally.
Yeah.
We could talk. I guess we're at some point we're gonna have to have just a cider episode.
Right now. Yeah.
Because we could talk about cider probably all night or whatever.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, there was one more like kind of interesting cider-based drink that I was gonna share with you.
Oh,
we
cool.
can save it for. Depends. We'll see. Like the sun is setting right now.
Yeah.
It's like it's full on crepuscular out here. That means it's dusk.
Good word, Alan.
No problem. So we'll see how comfortable we are once it's dark.
Yeah. Fair.
Anyways, so apple tree, for me, the most important thing is the hard cider. So that's what we're
right.
drinking.
Yeah.
Something that we started drinking an hour ago. But.
Cool. Well, and the lunch apples, obviously.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
yeah.
The brief period that we have them. Yeah.
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 When you cellar them, you throw them in your basement or what do you?
Oh, Lisa had a whole, if I remember right, it's a little tedious, but I think that she wrapped them in paper.
Oh, wow.
Wrapped each apple in paper and put them in a crate in our basement. And it's an old house. Like the basement is cold. The basement is really
yeah.
cold. Like it's
yeah.
never room temperature in our basement. So.
Right. Well, that's good
and,
for your apples.
Yeah. And they last for a week. Like they last longer than, like we eat them faster than they last.
Right.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Before it gets too dark, should we go do a little walk around so you can actually point some things out to me and
sure,
I'll actually
yeah,
be able to see them?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, and actually it's kind of laid out so that when you're sitting at those places in the patio,
yeah.
you can actually see all of the kind of feature items in the yard.
Right.
But on this side.
So that you can keep your eye on them, sit at the table
well,
and just move.
You can, it honestly, like this is, I'm giving myself more credit than I deserve, but like it's good sight lines and
yeah.
it does a little bit like we're not trying to like completely close ourselves off from the community, but like it like shelters you kind of.
Yeah,
and, like,
it provides you feel like a little bit of like separation from the street, but it's not like walled off like a dense hedge or something
right.
like that.
Yeah.
yeah. It's a nice balance.
So the tall items here. So we've talked about the apple tree.
Yeah.
And around the apple tree.
So that's
tree.
On like the front corner of your yard.
Yeah, totally.
And then on the other front corner, or like on the other side away from the apple tree, you have all of the cherry trees.
Yeah, that's right.
And then sort of like in the middle, but kind of like offset diagonally, you have the two plums.
Right, yeah. The other principal, like, sorry, I guess working down from height kind of.
Okay.
So like these are hazelnuts.
Okay.
And they are, this is again, like that, the kind of interesting work that the U of S is doing.
Right. Okay.
They're trying to breed a cultivar for commercial production of hazelnuts in the Prairie Provinces.
Cool.
So we have, like there's beaked hazelnuts that grow everywhere in the River Valley at Edmonton and throughout this kind of like parkland kind of landscape.
Uh-huh.
If I remember right, they've crossed those with some of the more conventional commercial hazelnuts.
Okay.
But these ones we purchased, they're not actually cultivars. They're just like, they're seedlings. So they're still like selecting from seedlings to try and pick the best ones to make a cultivar.
Right.
So these do bear fruit, but the hazelnuts are this big. They're like the size of a pea.
Are there any like buds of the fruit on them now?
We should see. So like they've already put out their little catkins that will open in the spring.
Ooh,
like
these catkins.
These are what will pollinate the tiny little fuchsia flowers that appear. So like this time in April or May, like first flowers we see in the yard, there's going to be a little tiny like, seriously, like fluorescent fuchsia flower on the end of
cool.
this. And these catkins open up. They like get long and like right now they're tight, like almost like pine cones.
Yeah.
But they lengthen and get like loosey-goosey. Like you can see them flapping in the wind and they pollinate the flowers. I'm sure that if we look around, you can see the tiny little, like here's one. So here's a little cluster of hazelnuts. There's actually like four or five in there.
Whoa,
but they're teeny, like they're.
Yeah, yeah. This looks like, it looks like a hop bud.
Oh yeah, totally.
Kind of,
yeah.
Like, yeah, it's very green and it's pliable.
It's got kind of like tendrils or whatever on the end.
Yeah, it's got like fronds sticking out or something, yeah.
So when you buy these hazelnut seedlings from the university, they say like, of everything that we sell, a quarter of them are not gonna be cold hardy, like they're gonna die every winter.
Right.
And a quarter of them will not produce fruit, and a quarter of them will, it's a crapshoot basically.
Yeah.
So these ones, whatever, we planted them. They're not really viable in terms of nut production. We've kept them around because it's actually a really nice plant. Like in the fall, it has really beautiful like copper colored leaves and everything. So,
cool.
Anyways, that's the hazelnuts.
Do you think that as they get bigger, they'll produce larger nuts, or is that no?
I don't think
that's just like what they're going to produce.
Think so. Because even like say the apples or the plums or anything else, like when they're young, they don't produce smaller fruit; they just produce less fruit.
Sure.
Like it's not like, like it'll still produce full-sized apples or plums or cherries, but it'll only produce a little bit. So.
Gotcha.
Yeah, and then on this side, in terms of, this is the next one for. Height, and this is the only what I would say like marginally hardy plant in our entire yard.
It's like that it might die off.
Yeah, or? it does experience die off through the winter. This is the elderberry, which I think we've mentioned maybe on the show.
Yeah.
But like again in the River Valley here, there's loads of red elderberry.
Yeah.
But they're not edible and they're not the same as the elderberry that they use to make syrup and stuff like that in Europe. But this is the European variety.
Right.
So it makes really fragrant flowers.
Uh-huh.
And this plant is a little stressed, but these will eventually make like the black, rich elderberries that are used to make syrup in Europe.
Cool.
Like I said, that's the only one that's like, everything else is like, we picked it because we know that it does well here.
Yeah.
This was kind of like the only pet project where it was like, I really loved eating elderberries
and maybe if we can make it work. It does look kind of stressed, like you can see that some of the leaves are like pitted and kind of
like in the first time I ever tasted it was when I was in Austria, like when I was in culinary school, and that was in May, and in Austria the elderberries, they flower in May.
Uh-huh.
Ours don't flower until late July here,
right?
But it's just because I think because they're just like having such a hard time getting over the winter.
Yeah. Well, our season definitely starts later than it would in Austria. Like, it's fairly different latitude, right?
Yeah, I don't know about latitude, but like it definitely... Oh yeah, we're also on a flight path.
Ghetto bird.
But like to have something in Edmonton that only has tiny green fruits in late August, like it's not viable.
It's not really gonna do well. Like, has this produced fruit that you've been able to eat before? This looks like it's not gonna produce enough fruit. Like, it's not gonna produce fruit this year that will be edible by the time it gets cold out.
But that's why, like, it's for the flowers.
Right.
So we
take
the flowers.
And the flowers are fragrant and delicious. You can do lots with the flowers.
There's been a, like, literally you see like clusters like this. There's been a handful that have developed to black elderberries.
Really?
But like it seems like if we want to keep this around, we're making flower, like we're using the flowers.
Right.
Either as garnishes or to make the syrup or tinctures or whatever. But
okay, so apple, hazelnuts. Or filberts.
For the American listeners.
For the Americans among
us. Yeah.
Elderberry.
Yeah.
The elderberry is like a cute little compact kind of bush.
Yeah. It's like human sized.
Yeah.
And then the big boys on this side of the yard. So we have our two plum trees. And I guess the important thing to note is that these are not the kind, they're not Prunus domesticus. They're not like the plums that you get at most
grocery stores. Yeah.
They're a different species entirely. It's Prunus salicina. It has a bunch of common names, like Japanese plum is probably the most common, or that's the one that the University of Saskatchewan uses is Japanese plum. And so the fruit is much smaller.
Yeah.
Like they're like what?
The size of a golf ball? Yeah, maybe
ping
even a little bit small. Yeah, yeah.
Ping pong ball size. Yeah. And we have two cultivars.
Okay.
This one's called Petsitsin, and this one's called Ivanovka.
Okay.
They have very Russian-sounding names because some of the precursors to them, I think, were developed in Russia.
Okay.
Or possibly in northern China, I'm not sure. The funny thing is that, we should just taste some shortly. I know you have had them before, but...
Yeah.
We call them plums, but they're a different species than the grocery store plums. And to me, they just exist somewhere on this stone fruit spectrum.
Right.
Like between a plum and a peach or an apricot or a nectarine.
Yeah.
Because especially the Petsitsin, it has crazy, crazy strong aromatics of peach and nectarine to me.
You said there's no fruit left on the Petsitsin tree? Or?
That one, you're welcome to look. But like I have this fruit for you to taste though.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah.
And what's in the guild for them?
The guild is primarily comfrey, like these ones that are waist height right now.
Yeah.
This is all comfrey. For us, the principal reason it's there is mulch for weed protection.
Okay.
So we let these grow like this, and soon these will try and flower again. Mm-hmm. And as soon as they're about to flower, we chop them all down.
Okay.
And then just spread them around this guild.
Yeah.
Just like the weed pressure here is so intense, like this would all be dandelions and thistle and stuff like that.
You should see my backyard. It's a nightmare.
You need some comfrey.
Seriously.
It's like a pretty, it's like a extremely vigorous and some would say invasive, but we just, like, it just gets chopped and then grows
It
chops and it's like this just kind of green mulch.
Well, and it may be invasive, but it's like a fairly large plant, so it's like not that hard to come and chop it down, you know? Like, unlike dandelion, which is like this tiny little thing that just goes everywhere.
Yeah, exactly. And in this guild, there's other, Just flowers that are planted to attract pollinators. So like it's the flowers are gone now, but that's bee balm.
Okay.
That flower that's kind of fallen over now is a prairie cone flower. What's this called? Horse mint or like wild hyssop over here.
Okay.
I don't know if it came up. Yeah. And then a little bit farther out on the guilds, these like more bushy, these are actually huscaps.
Oh yeah, okay, cool.
So like we tried to plant them so that they're not like under the, like they're a little bit removed from the plum so they still get lots of light. Yeah, it's I think this guild is very similar. Lots of comfrey for the chop and drop.
Yeah.
And then some wildflower, or sorry, some flowers. We've got Blazing Meadow Star and Foxglove.
Gotcha.
And another Hascap.
Are those Hascap producing?
Yeah, we're way past the season for them. They're by far the earliest fruit.
Cool.
Like they'll be flowering when other plants are just leafing out here.
Right.
Like by early June, they're flowering, or by late May. Yeah.
Hascaps, they're like, our best friend around here. They grow really well. They produce really well, and they make amazing, super sweet fruit. Like,
yes.
Big chunky berries. Like, yeah.
Cool. We've got, for the big boys, these sour cherries. So again, this is like a big U of S project where they've bred specific varieties of dwarf sour cherries that are hardy in the prairies, and they've tried to select them for commercial production.
Right. So they're not Evans cherries, or they're like...
They're not Evans
they're
cherries.
They're Evans adjacent, maybe?
They like, are. So like the Evans cherry, the scientific... So Evans cherry is a variety of the species Prunus cerasa.
Okay.
The dwarf sour cherries that are produced by the U of S are a cross of Prunus cerasa and Prunus fruticosa. So they're a hybrid, or like they're, a cross of the species of Evans cherry and a different one.
Okay.
They're just bred to be a little bit more compact, I think intended to help with mechanized harvesting.
Oh, okay.
And possibly
right,
some other like
they're
cold
selecting
heart.
For commercial purposes. Yeah.
I think they have more varieties now, but these are all of what the U of S called their romance series of cherries.
Ooh.
So I don't know how you're feeling right now, but and they all have really corny names to that effect. Like there's
And the entire your entire crop of cherry trees is wearing a veil, which seems very
that's true,
romantic.
And that's what Lisa and I when we. It's actually kind of embarrassing, like watching us like try and hoist this mesh over, because we're talking about like 25 feet by 5 or 6 feet.
And you just need four drones to.
Hey, that's a good idea actually.
It's probably a bad idea. It'd probably be a nightmare. I mean, it could work, but yeah.
Right now we use hockey sticks.
Oh yeah.
Just hoist it up on hockey sticks.
How very Canadian of you, Al.
But yeah, they all have corny names. It's like Carmine Jewel, Valentine, Cupid, Romeo, Juliet, Crimson Passion, and Cupid, or something like that. Yeah.
Oh, there's a bunch.
I think there's six.
Sorry, those are the names of different varieties of like the crosses that they've made to try and, And do you have more than one of those here?
No, they sucker, especially once they're well established, they sucker a lot. So there might be some growing in random parts of the yard, but actually in this raised bed that's covered with the mesh right now, it's six cherry trees of six different varieties.
Oh, it's six different varieties.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, so when you were pointing to them and saying the names, you were saying the names of the actual variety of each cherry tree?
Yes. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Oh.
Well, do they have like, is that what you guys call them, or do you call them? Do you have pet names for them?
No, that's what we call them.
Oh, okay.
It's interesting. Like, I think again, like Lisa is much more familiar with, like she could look at one and possibly identify it.
Right.
I'm kind of more like in the kitchen. And she'll be like, she'll bring it in and say like, this is good for pie. Or like, this is good for liquor. Or this is good for, sorry, liqueur or whatever.
So she comes in, she hands you a cherry. She's like, this is good for pie. And then you taste it and you're like, this is terrible for pie. The chef says.
Well, honestly, that's like, okay, I don't even know. Like, I haven't heard, these are bred for commercial growth in the prairie provinces. Yeah. I don't know of anyone who's really producing them commercial. Like, you can't get them in the grocery store, that's for sure.
Yeah, I can't. Yeah, like, you don't hear a lot about, like, commercial cherry production in the prairies.
Yeah.
But
like, there is some attempt, at least, like, in the literature that the university has put out about, like, the culinary uses for them, and they'll say, like, this one's good for preserves and this one's good for or whatever it is. But I don't know if it's like the tail trying to wag the dog, but like, I feel like maybe there should be more. There's not very much interest from chefs. Like,
right.
I don't see these on menus in restaurants, or I don't see them in products in the grocery store.
Yeah. Well, and that probably has to do with availability, honestly. Like,
because when
chefs are looking for products to feature, you need to be able to get a reliable supply.
Yeah, totally.
Not, you know, like, even if you're doing it seasonally, mm-hmm. you need to know that, like, you know, for these 2 weeks or 3 weeks,
right.
you're
going
to be able to get enough to put them on your menu or something like that. And if there isn't anyone who's producing them commercially, then that's not really usually an option. So mm-hmm. it is kind of, it's sort of like a catch 22, you know, like,
yeah.
they probably need to, like, hand off some of that to the, I mean, it's great that they're, you know, doing the horticultural exploration to try and make cultivars that will work well in the prairies, but, you know, maybe they need to, like, you know, do a little two different sciences sort of, like, meet,
like, interdisciplinary.
Yeah, they need to do some interdisciplinary stuff with, like, the marketing school or something in Saskatoon, and see if they can come up with ways to convince people to grow them commercially. Because and like, the ones that you have, they produce quite a bit, right?
Yes.
So it's, like, probably viable to
I think it, like, I don't know about, like, the mechanical harvesting, and I mean, the fruits, having just worked in the Okanagan for a little while, like, the fruit game, the economics of, like, the fruit industry seems pretty messed up. Like, like, it's, if it's not perfect, it's not going to sell. If it's not the right variety, it's not going to sell.
Yeah. So you need, like, you need a whole, like, if you want to produce fruit commercially, like, you need a whole, like, strategy from growing it to what, like, what end product it's going to be in, basically, if you want to make it a viable business or whatever.
And anticipate for the wastage and,
and
all that. Like, it seemed, I don't know if this is maybe a generalization, but, like, it seemed like the entire cider industry in the Okanagan was a way to try and solve the problem of
having too much fruit that isn't viable to send to a grocery store. Yeah.
Either because it's the wrong variety, the condition isn't good, or they just, like, one thing that I heard was, like, that sometimes it's not economically possible to compete with the fruit that's being picked in Washington and Oregon state because of, like, whatever the subsidies or how they work in the United States and stuff. So, yeah, it sounds like a real
tough row to hoe.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, a lot of aircraft in this neighborhood. Eh?
Yeah. Jeez. Just, like, we got invaded by a helicopter and it just will not leave us alone now. Oh, maybe it's after us. Like, two people, like, standing outside after sunset.
Yeah. Is this the last on-location recording?
I hope not. Okay. So it looks like you grabbed a bowl of plums.
Yeah. So first, this is the Patsitsin plum. So these are the ones that we picked all of them in the last week.
Okay.
And we've just been, every plate gets a plum kind of deal at our house for that week. But yeah, just put your nose in that bowl and smell it.
Yeah. Boy, I wonder what that sounds like. Yeah. It smells amazing. It smells, very aromatic. Actually, it smells like preserved plums, or, you know, like a bunch of, like, plum, like Asian plum preserves, or like dried plums. It tastes like, or it smells like that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man, does it? It's perfumey. It's so sweet smelling. man, I don't even know how to describe it. It's very, like you said, extremely aromatic. It has this like rich, sweet smell or mm-hmm. something.
The very, like the sheer, the kind of strength of the aroma always blows me away. Like you can have a handful of those sitting on the counter and you walk by and you're like, whoo.
Whoa, it's plum time.
Yeah.
Can I eat one?
Yeah, of course, yeah.
What's the best way to select one? Just the softest one probably, right?
I think like these all should be basically super ripe.
Okay.
When they come off the tree, like you can see these are now kind of a uniform red.
Yeah.
When they come off the tree, they're typically, they still have a lot of yellow on them, maybe even a little bit of green on them. And they're, it's interesting, like they're a kind of fruit that doesn't really fully ripen until they're off the tree. I think it's called climacteric, or there's some fancy word for it.
Okay.
So we talked earlier, like if
you... A lot of stone fruit are like that, right?
I think so, yeah. Like yeah. if you, so we kind of, like we said, we tickle the plums every day. If they come off easily, they come to the kitchen and they sit on the counter for a day or two. And then they like, yeah, it just becomes so aromatic and soft and yeah.
Amazing. It's such a beautiful plum. Mm-hmm. It's so strong in flavor. Like it's got such like deep kind of like sweet fruit notes. Like, man, it's like so, it tastes so rich.
Yeah.
So yeah. It's so yeah. rich in flavor. Like it's a small plum. But it just has so much flavor intensity.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, delicious. So how many of these will you get?
How many? I've yeah. definitely never counted a harvest, but I would say like this year we probably got 10 pounds. Yeah, that would be yeah. my guess. Yeah.
Over the course of what, a month?
A couple weeks.
Couple weeks, okay.
Yeah.
Man, that's quick.
It does seem, yeah, it does seem to, we've had some strange, like, weather here the last, sorry, some, maybe it's increasingly the norm, but like last summer was brutal for all yeah. of these trees because we had an unprecedented heat wave.
Also, it was like, it was also really dreary for a lot of the summer last summer. And then, yeah, it was just that crazy heat wave for like 3 weeks.
A couple years before that, we had a, not unprecedented, but like a almost like a once in a generation kind of cold snap in February. So we don't know, like we've had heavy years and light years. These aren't supposed to be biennial like that apple tree. Like they are supposed mm-hmm. to produce every year. But we've had some really light, like last year we had almost no plums, but we had that crazy heat wave. So we're yeah. still, these have really only been producing substantial amounts of fruit for the last 3 years. So,
and as they continue to grow, like you said, they'll yield more fruit, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
So can I go tickle a plum on the,
sure, yeah,
one?
Look for the darkest one. I do have, so the Ivanovka, I've literally harvested one and it's sitting ripe on our kitchen counter.
Okay,
If you can't tickle any off, that one's probably better than anything you'll get on the tree anyways.
Okay, here I go, people. It's dark enough that I kind of have to use a flashlight for this actually now.
Don't force them.
Don't worry, Alan, I won't.
Listen to them.
Let the plums speak to you.
They either want to come off or they don't.
So far, I've tickled about 15. Okay, now I'm at about 25 and I still haven't found one.
They're just not ready, those guys.
Alan, don't tell me what's ready. I'm tickling them. I'm gonna find the one plum that you forgot to tickle today. Watch out, Comfrey.
I'm gonna go and get you the one Ivanovka that I picked 2 or 3 days ago, okay?
Yeah, you might as well grab it because as much as I was hoping that I would find one that's ripe, I think you are correct. Alan, there's rhubarb in this guild.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's rhubarb.
You can't control the rhubarb.
The patitsin, when they're fully ripe, they're kind of like this red delicious apple red.
Yeah.
Extremely aromatic. Like I said, to me, it reminds me of peaches.
Yeah.
The Patsitsin, when they're fully ripe, they're more of a purple color, more of the color of like the typical European plums that you would get at the
supermarket.
Superstore. The grocery store is what I meant to say. To me, not half as aromatic. It's hard to tell. I know that for the Patsitsin, you had a whole bowl and now you just have one. But like,
it doesn't smell nearly as perfumey.
Yeah. And so we've really only had a few years to work with both of these varieties in a large volume. Mm-hmm. But our strategy right now is like the Patsitsin, fresh.
Yeah.
The aroma, the juiciness, the peach vibes, it's like we just gorge ourselves on them while they're fresh.
Yeah.
These Ivanovka ones like actually cook down really well and they make something that looks and tastes a lot more like the plum jam that you would get at a European market.
Right.
And so most of the preserves that we put up are this variety. Yeah.
Can I eat this one?
Sure, yeah.
Oh yeah. It tastes much more like a European plum. It's mm-hmm. not nearly as like rich tasting, mm-hmm. but it is quite fresh tasting.
Yeah.
It has like the skin is nicely tannic, like not overly so, you know. Mm-hmm.
That's one of the interesting thing about plums, like obviously like with apples, yes, obviously the skin and there's flesh and there's a difference between the two of them, but the difference between the skin and the flesh on a plum is really striking. Like a mm-hmm. lot of the acidity and
yeah.
astringency that you get when you...
comes from the skin.
Yeah, yeah, totally. And yeah. so eating them all together is kind of like the experience. Yeah, or eating them...
Yeah, and actually like eating a plum without the skin often is like, ugh, this is like kind of mushy and cloying or something.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I mean, I feel like I should have eaten that one first and then Patsitsin after, but...
Have another Patsitsin.
Okay.
I mean, there's yeah. also, like, I don't know if you want more bites. I have a Patsitsin jam and a cheese that it goes really well with.
Yeah, I'd love to try that.
Okay, cool.
What about cherries? Are there cherries yet?
Yes, so we're at the end of the cherry season. Like
okay.
We've picked the majority of them. There's still some in there. But we've picked most. And actually, it's actually rather a late year for them, I would say, because okay. we had such a wet early summer, a wet and cool early summer. But even still, like at this point, like the majority of them have been frozen, preserved in liquor, jammed, made into pie, that kind of thing.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, and you had mentioned raspberries too.
Yeah, so like this, there's a line of raspberries. You see these stakes that are in the ground, the
yeah.
green T-posts?
Yeah.
Everything between those is raspberries.
Gotcha.
So they're kind of in a line parallel to the cherries. Right now there's four different varieties in there. They were only planted last year. And
okay.
now they're like, I knew that raspberries suckered and like were vigorous and aggressive, but like
yeah.
it's, like I have to dig out.
It's gonna be a lot of work.
Yeah.
Yeah. Keeping them from taking over your entire yard, probably.
Yeah.
yeah.
So yeah, this is the first year that we were able, they were planted last year, but they only produce on second year growth. So we were able to harvest some this year, but next year will be our first significant harvest,
yeah.
I guess.
Okay. Yeah. So you think there's probably not very many berries on there?
I haven't dug around in there in a couple weeks, actually, so it's worth a look.
My grandma on my mom's side had a ton of raspberry bushes. She had a huge garden.
Mm-hmm.
She had a ton of raspberry bushes in her backyard. And we would pick all day sometimes.
Yeah.
Oh, Alan, I found a nice one for you.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Did you just eat it?
Nope. Saved it.
Oh, my goodness. Thank you.
Yeah.
Raspberries might be my favorite fruit.
They're pretty amazing when they're good.
Yeah.
Yeah. But man, when I was living in BC.
If you say blackberries, I'm going to punch you.
Seriously, there was like, so one of the places that I lived in for a while was this cabin. It was like, just like legit in the woods, like a cabin in the woods near Roberts Creek mm-hmm. on the Sunshine Coast in BC.
Mm-hmm.
And the entire like, the cabin was like on a larger property, and I don't exactly know how big the property was, but it was quite large. Like it was at least 5 or 6 acres. Mm-hmm. And I would say like 2 to 3 acres of it was just a gigantic blackberry bramble. Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah,
you know, not like with paths cut through it so you could go in and pick blackberries. Right. Just like, you know,
I
like
can, yeah, I've seen, I know,
legit,
what you mean, yeah.
Like they're super invasive and they're very thorny and really tough to deal with.
Yes.
And like, yeah, but they were unbelievable. Like they were so delicious. And I learned some really good strategies for how to like pick blackberries out of a bramble like that.
You mean in terms of negotiating the thorns and such?
Yeah. So you just take like boards or a piece of plywood basically, and you like throw them on top of the black, like, and the blackberry bushes are like, were like as tall or taller than me. They were like 6 to 6.5 feet
yeah.
high. You just take like a few boards or a piece of plywood, you throw it on top, and then you like sort of like angle it from the ground onto the top of the bushes, and then you like jump on it and smash down like part of the bushes, but it makes like this little path, and then you get in between the bushes, and then you can pick on both sides, and then you take, and once you get into like the end of your board or whatever, you take another board and then throw it on the next section, and then you just keep doing that until
that's how
you
they
like
make crop circles. Did you know that?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, no, yeah. Actually, Alan, aliens make crop circles. So, no, I didn't know that. But
I don't know if it's like, maybe raspberries aren't. Well, okay, first of all, blackberries, they don't have the acidity, so I just don't like them.
But they can. Like, if you get them when they're just right, you know, like, but I understand what you mean. Yeah, they definitely are like more plump and sweet. But like, if you get them just at the right time, like, yeah, it's different than blackberries that you can get in the grocery store, because they're all overripe, basically.
Yes.
If you buy them in the grocery store, they're either sour or they're overripe. Mm-hmm. But if you're picking them yourself, and you can be selective, there's a sweet spot that is just like, oh, man, unbelievable and so fragrant. And
I don't know if it's like climate or what, but there's a handful, like these brambly guys right in front of us are gooseberries.
Right.
And they have a very dramatic arc where they go from like hard and astringent and extremely sour to ripe. But then like they'll stay on the bush until they have no acidity at all.
Right.
And they're just like mildly sweet. And they have some of the kind of funk of black currants, actually.
Okay.
To which they're related, I guess. So they have like a, when they're super ripe, they're not great, or it depends what you're doing with them, I guess. But
right,
they're,
but they're kind of
they
like
really
mushy
die.
And very, not
yeah,
very
exactly.
Yeah.
They're mealy and whereas like to me the plums, like they just get better and better and better until they fall off, and then like,
right.
you better eat them or
And then if you don't eat them, then you're
you're just making compost.
Not doing yourself any favors.
yeah,
you grew them for nothing.
Yes. Yeah.
I'm pretty envious of the food that you have growing in your yard. It's awesome. I have a yard and a house that I own, mm-hmm. and ideally I would like to put food plants like out front of it, but yeah, mm-hmm. there are several other projects before we actually get to landscaping it in a way that like,
right. yeah.
you know, that we would want to, but, mm-hmm. but yeah, ideally I want to try and get some fruit trees for sure.
Yeah.
And I really like that, like the Hascap bushes work really well too. Like, mm-hmm. you know, they're pretty self-contained. I don't know if I would want to put raspberries in my front yard, cause like that's a project, you know, like
it's maintenance for sure.
Yeah. I don't want to have to do a ton of maintenance. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like the Hascap bushes are pretty self-contained and like the fruit trees. I mean, there's obviously maintenance when you, like, obviously you have to, you know, do something to keep the weeds off from underneath them, right?
Right.
Because you're not going to put grass underneath them. Mm-hmm. But yeah, something like what you have with the guild that you have growing around them and mulching it in that way,
mm-hmm.
doesn't
mm-hmm.
seem like that crazy amount of maintenance.
Yeah, it's not really just in the spring. Like, it will put up some, I guess I don't know what They're not really suckers. They come off of the base of the trunk. It'll put up a lot of little shoots there that you cut back.
Right.
And they're pruned quite aggressively in the spring.
Okay.
Mostly just so that they are shaped the way that we
right.
want.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So that they stay dense and kind of, yeah.
Yeah, like we don't, I want to make sure that, again, like thinking when I'm 70 years old, I still want to be able to like harvest the plums.
Right.
I don't want it to be, because I think
like
they will.
Like 30 feet tall or something.
Yeah, even though they're kind of like a dwarf tree, like they will get tall. I don't want to have to use an extension ladder to harvest the plums.
Totally. So,
we basically, yeah, like the apple and plums, I get on my step ladder, and as high as I can reach, that's where I just like cut all of the like water spouts that are coming.
Oh,
out
that, yeah, that's smart.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Step ladder height.
Yeah.
Cool.
Even that might become dicey at some age, but.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Quick shout out to the other edibles in this yard. We don't have to go
yeah.
into deep.
Yeah, let's knock out the, let's do the lightning round and knock out the rest.
Chives everywhere. Every
right.
little nook and cranny that I didn't want dandelions to grow, but there was still soil, there's chives. So like that whole strip there on the side of that strawberry bed, like where there's the white siding.
Yeah.
That's like, what the seed packet called Chinese chives.
Oh.
Like the ones that have like the flat cross section.
Oh yeah, 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 yeah. Do you use those for cooking?
They've only, like I just planted them last year.
Okay.
And they didn't actually come back as, I don't know if it's just the soil wasn't good, but they didn't come back as strong as the conventional chives here.
Okay.
So I just left them this year. But we have the Chinese chives and sorrel and dill.
I wanna go look at them.
All in this strip here.
Cool. Oh yeah, and your dill is all like bolted. And,
yes.
Yeah.
And then these leaves, like this is a red veined sorrel here. So like the green leaves with the red veins.
Oh yeah.
All through here
those
is sorrel.
Those are beautiful.
Oh, some thistles.
Thistle? How'd you get in there?
You like thistle tea?
I don't know if I've had it.
I only saw, Blair Lebsack had it on a menu for one of his pop-ups at Nature's Green Acres. But yeah, there's dill here. Strawberries we didn't really talk about. There's rhubarb all through this strip here, like actually
right.
quite a large patch there.
Oh yeah.
And then rhubarb.
That's
rhubarb,
a healthy one.
Rhubarb.
Are there any strawberries in here, do you think?
They are still producing fruit, but the
oh,
kids
right. you said that.
The
yeah,
kids
yeah, yeah.
basically like strip them every morning, so
oh.
I think there's actually a tomato plant. Right by your left hand, there's a tomato plant.
Oh yeah.
We did not plant. Oh, it's got tomatoes on it.
Yeah, sure
this
does.
Is literally from our, like our, we put compost in here in the spring and
there was a tomato seed in there.
The compost and I just didn't rip it out. But look, there's little green tomatoes in it.
Nice looking little cherry tomatoes.
Whoops.
Well, yeah, I mean, hopefully they'll do well. I mean, it's not gonna come back, I guess, probably.
That's right, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't see any strawberries, those kids. Thorough.
Dang kids.
Yeah. Like a kid on a strawberry.
Asparagus? Did we talk about asparagus?
No.
That was like the one of the main like perennial vegetables. So like all of these fern looking guys here.
Oh
this is
yeah,
all,
I was gonna ask you about these.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's all asparagus. They were just
oh,
planted
okay. yeah,
last
yeah,
year.
Yeah, totally. Of course it is. They were just planted this year, you said?
Last year.
Oh okay.
So like maybe 14 months ago. I actually don't know offhand like how many years they need before you can harvest.
Uh-huh.
But and these are cherry suckers. So like
that
was
okay.
one thing, like if you're talking about low maintenance.
And that is too, right?
Yeah, yeah. So like the like, you know, 7 feet away, these are throwing up suckers
wow.
all over the place. So they're kind of like the raspberries. Maybe not as aggressive, but like yeah there's
trying to take over.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah. I see a couple nice looking raspberries there.
Get them.
Get them.
And then I think the last like substantial edible that we haven't talked about yet, this big bush over here is a special kind of currant. The U of S sold it as a black clove currant. It's a different species than the black currant that we like that cassis is made from.
Okay.
It looks like a very sickly plant. I don't know if you can, like,
it looks like the leaves are all kind of like broken and rusty and
yeah. It some sources also call it that's one for me.
Yeah.
Little babies.
Yeah, but they're tasty.
Sometimes called a Missouri currant.
Okay.
It has never produced more than three berries in a season.
How do you find three berries in mess?
And it's taller than me, right?
Yeah.
At first I realized, or I was pretty sure that it was a pollination problem, because I read that they need another plant from the same genus to pollinate. And that's actually why I planted these gooseberries here.
Oh, okay.
Because they're both from the Rubus genus.
Yeah.
But these are now well established and have been around for years, and they're still
still not producing.
Yeah. The flowers that it makes, I don't know much about pollination, but it looks to me like only like a hummingbird or a butterfly with a long
proboscis. Oh,
really? Yeah. So I feel like it's something like the bugs here just don't get it or can't make it work. Mm-hmm. So my actual plan, maybe next year, is to get rid of this, to cut it down and to replace it with, we have a really beautiful black Wyoming raspberry in the backyard.
Oh, cool.
And to put that here. And then I have this kind of raspberry spectrum.
Yeah.
Because it's not fruiting now, but the very last raspberry in this line is a golden raspberry.
Oh, cool.
So it's like gold, red, black.
Black.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
That's the dream anyways.
And so the one that you have in your backyard is producing and
we don't have it staked very well. So it's like basically a spider from a horror movie, the big spider from the end of It. Mm-hmm. That's what it looks like. And it's like dangerous. It's so thorny and it's just like crawling all over the place. But the fruit is really great. Really dark and really great fruit.
Cool. Did you also have some hops in your backyard?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We have just at the end of this walk, there's a pergola and there's hops growing over it.
Yeah,
and we've trained some of it along the length of the fence. I think that we planted three varieties and only kept one. I think it's Cascade though. So like it's a premium brewing hops. Huh. I haven't done much with the actual
opportunity there.
Hops like catkins. But one of the interests for me was the shoots, like eating the shoots like asparagus.
Yeah, hop shoots are great.
Yeah.
Like they have this they still have like really intense, how do you describe hop flavor? I mean, it's bitter, obviously, but like also grassy, like, I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah, like the hops, like the Cascade hops, catkins like have citrus vibes.
Yeah.
I don't know if that
grapefruit vibes. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if that is in the shoots necessarily.
Yeah. I don't know if the citrusiness comes out in the shoots. I don't think so.
I think honestly, the only time I've eaten the shoots is at Bira.
Oh yeah.
They had maybe it was hop shoots with asparagus and hollandaise or something like that.
Oh yeah.
Yeah,
we had hop shoots on the menu on a bunch of dishes not a bunch of dishes, but like recontextualized a few times on the menu at Fiskabar.
What was there?
During the season when they were available, like when you could just get like the little baby shoots. Mm-hmm. And that was where I was like kind of first exposed to them, and we had like shoots from a bunch of varieties.
Oh, is that right? Yeah.
Yeah, but they pretty much all tasted the same. They're like kind of resinous and But
like really more like asparagus than anything, right?
Yeah,
like they're just
they're tender and floral tasting kind of. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, cool tour. What else we got, Alan? Oh, I already know how we're gonna end this episode. It's on Cora's joke. So,
okay, hi Cora. Do you have a joke to tell our listeners?
Yes.
Okay, let's hear it.
So once upon a time, there was a little snail, and he was like, oh, I'm so slow. I need to get a car. So he went to a car store and said, I want a big red car with an S on it. Then he got a big red car with an S on it.
Wow, they had that? That's lucky.
Then he was driving around and he said, look at that S car go.
Great joke. High five.
Thanks for listening to Food Court, a podcast recorded in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. Food Court is hosted by Alan Sutterby and Shale McDonald. Theme music by Ryan and Shale McDonald. Make sure to subscribe to Food Court in Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, or in your favorite podcast player. We love to hear from our listeners. Please drop us a line at feedback@foodcourt.fm or find us on Instagram at Food Court Podcast. If you want to spread the word, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. We'll be back in 2 weeks with a fresh new episode. Thanks for listening.